everyone. I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Show, where we talk about health tips and strategies to help you be smart, sexy, and strong. On today's show, I have as my guest Abel James. Abel is a best-selling author, musician, speaker, and entrepreneur. He has the number one rated health podcast in more than 8 countries, and his award-winning web series, Fat Burning Man, has helped millions reclaim their health with outdoor adventures, cutting-edge science, and good food. When it debuted, his cooking app, Caveman Feast, bested the Food Network, Nickelodeon, and even Angry Birds with more than 1,000 five-star reviews in 24 hours. Abel became the first indie publisher ever to hold Apple's number one food app and number one health podcast at the same time. And I'm sure his new book, The Wild Diet, will be a big hit as well. Abel has traveled the world with his wife, Allison, and lives off the grid in the Colorado Rockies. On today's show, Abel shares with us what is wrong with the foods most of us eat, including what's happening with the popular paleo diet. He talks about the importance of feasting and fasting and other aspects of eating that he's found to be particularly important based upon his knowledge he's gained over the years in interviewing top health experts, traveling the world, and overcoming his own health challenges. So please enjoy the show. On today's show, I have as my guest, Abel James. Welcome to the show, Abel.
Thank you very much, Trevor.
It's great to have you on. So
I'm stoked.
Yeah, I want to talk about your new book that's coming out and why you felt like you needed to write a book. I know you've had all this information and you've got this great history of losing 20 pounds in 40 days, eating bacon, chocolate, and butter, and you're called the Fat Burning Man. And so we want to know all about what led you on this path, because it's certainly not the traditional path.
No, it's not. It was a haphazard one, but mostly I've just been really excitable my whole life and really into lots of information, great food, and all the stuff that kind of just like, it makes sense that I eventually arrived at something in the world of health. My mom, you might know this, but I'm sure your listeners don't. My mom is a holistic nurse practitioner, and when I was a baby, I got really sick and I had a temperature of like 106 degrees for too long, and they pumped me full of basically every antibiotic and medicine that the Western approach could. Didn't really have great results, and now I'm allergic to pretty much everything. But the way that my mom saved me was through herbal medicine and natural approaches, a lot of Eastern practices, and that was something that really informed the way that I went, and also the way that I rebelled when I was in my early 20s. And that's basically when I, for the first time in my life, I got a great job right out of college working in consulting, and they got me the best insurance possible. And so I'm like, I'm going to use this. And so I went into the doctor, and my family has a history of high blood pressure, thyroid disorder, in some cases being overweight, you know, typical stuff that a lot of families have. And so the conversation with my doctor was, let's preempt this. You know, I'm healthy now, I'm young or whatever, but I want to make sure I don't get any of this stuff. And over the course of time, you know, he's just like, okay, what you need to do immediately is change your diet. You need to go super low fat, low calorie, avoid red meat, avoid cholesterol, and take these drugs because you're having trouble sleeping. And, you know, every time I went in, I peed in a cup, got my blood drawn, and my numbers were worse and worse and worse. And I was getting fatter and fatter, even though I was running more. And all of a sudden, you know, I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like 23, 24 years old. And my boss is just ragged on me for putting on weight. I've got like a double chin. I look like I'm in my 40s. And I'm like, well, this isn't working. So I've always been a little bit of I love to experiment on myself and be my own guinea pig. So if that end of the spectrum, you know, the advice from that kind of doctor anyway, because there are good and bad ones, I went to the total flip side. My brother got really into bodybuilding, and so I was reading a lot of like underground bodybuilding manuals and stuff about like physique. And I learned about the high fat approach to diet and the cyclical ketogenic diet, and a lot of things that made sense to me. Although I was doing my best to follow my doctor's advice, and so when I got to that point, I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna see if this works. and do the exact opposite of what my doctor told me. So I went super high fat. I was eating a lot of eggs. And I mean like the bacon chocolate. That's mostly just like an illustration because it's funny and it's interesting that that actually I still eat a lot of that stuff today, a lot of butter and a lot of super high fat stuff. And hence the name Fat Burning Man. It's like a triple entendre, but that's one of them is I have found tremendous success eating with a high fat approach as opposed to a low fat one. So when that happened, it was a little bit more than a month, like 40 days. And basically all of the extra inflammation that I had, the water weight, the fat and everything else just like dropped right off super easily. And obviously I had my youth going for me at that point and I still kind of do, but I was just shocked by how easy it was and how it just kind of happened automatically. Even though I was running less, I certainly wasn't dieting. You know, I wasn't restricting myself at all. And my body just kind of like whipped right back into the shape that any, you know, young 24-year-old should be in. And so I really wanted other people to learn from that. And that's why I started my show to basically be the counterbalance to all the misinformation that's clogging up are, I guess it's in media, it's in newspapers, you can't escape this stuff. And I just wanted to be something that could democratize any idea about health, really. So you've been on my show, like I've talked to a lot of people who are super smart in their domains of expertise, learn from them, and then that's where the book comes from. It's basically, I wanted to make something that affect people, not just by, you know, here's a diet book, here's how you follow my diet, but make like a really cool cookbook that we encapsulate with a lot of stories from my own life that illustrate how people live in other parts of the world. We've been traveling the world for a while. We sold everything. We lived in Austin for about 6 years and sold our house, cars, everything. We've just been traveling ever since and have been really informed by the way that people live in, especially like ancient places like Bali and Fiji and going to Australia to see how they kind of like are a cheeky little America who has a lot of the same problems. But like all of those things have really informed how do you communicate the common sense wisdom about all this stuff, which is actually really simple. So in my book, it's mostly like entertainment and memoirs that communicates that this is a lot simpler than most people make it out to be.
Okay, well, if it's so simple, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So what have you learned from all these different people you've had on your podcast and from the different traveling you've done from your own personal experience? What do you find are the overlapping things? And I imagine this is what you put in your book. What is this that are the simple things that we need to be doing?
Yeah. Well, health experts love to disagree about almost everything. But there's one thing that they agree about, and that's that we should all be eating more green leafy vegetables. And I don't think anyone would be surprised by that, but I think a lot of people don't actually do it. And I think the reason they don't do it is because they're not that delicious, right? Like someone who's raised on freeze-dried lima beans and cubed tasteless carrots and crap like that, those aren't vegetables, and they have no business being called vegetables, right? But that's, you know, even I was eating certainly my fair share of fish sticks and cubed carrots and whatever growing up. And I think in this freeze-dried processed food world that we are all kind of in right now, that's the default. And so in my book, I kind of uncover how that happened, where we went from eating fresh foods and for the most part, eating foods that were good for us, or at least fat-heavy, nutrient-dense. They had the right nutrients in them because Victory Gardens were something that just most people had, right? But that turned into Jack in the Box and a bunch of chains. And even going to the restaurant, it used to be that our flavors came from, you know, you go to a good French restaurant and their flavors come primarily from nutrient dense fats. And now our flavors come from artificial chemicals. And my job out of college was working as a strategy consultant. And we worked with a lot of Fortune 500, some of them in the big food industry. And so I kind of got to see how the pursuit of growing a company and making it successful took over. So the people who are running it are much more concerned with shareholder value and quarterly profits than they are with your own health. The products that they come out with are kind of an afterthought in a lot of cases. And that happened to us without us really knowing it. And then you compound that with the fact that like the media is putting out all this misinformation, you know, on purpose or not. A lot of times the people who are reporting the news or reporting science are reporting the science that they know will get clicked on or will sell papers or whatever, which has nothing to do with real science. It's usually bad observational studies that don't really achieve anything. And so for someone who studied, you know, you went to school and you studied some real science. And when I was a young nerd going to college, I also studied like brain science and spent a lot of time in the lab. And the way that a lot of the science is communicated today through the media is just blasphemy, I think. Yeah. And it gets us into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think you bring up a lot of great points here. It's really about getting back to whole foods, right? And that's why your book's called The Wild Diet, because we need to get back to nature.
Well, basically, there's this whole world that we're used to at this point of straight out of a horror movie, this factory farm where chickens never get to use their legs and cows don't either. And, you know, they're pumped full of hormones and antibiotics. You know, there's just some news that came out recently that even though it's illegal to do it now, they're still doing it and putting all of this crap in our food. And when you eat sick animals or vegetables that are GMO or grains that have been sprayed with toxic pesticides that were invented in a war, you know, it's like the state of our food system is absurd at this point, and we're just kind of used to it. That's why I present, you know, the wild diet, not as a dogmatic diet in and of itself, but basically as the counterbalance to this horror movie world of food that we have right now. And basically the closer that we can get food to nature, to as nature intended, you know, if you're going to eat animals, they should be fed on their natural wild diet. And also, you know, there's a big outdoor component to it as well. I've always been just in love with the outdoors. We were talking before this interview about the fact that right now we're up in Prescott, which sounds like biscuit, but it's spelled like Prescott in Arizona. And we're at elevation. We're spending time instead of with a bunch of people or chain restaurants or whatever. There are mule deer and wild turkeys, and we're cooking everything ourselves. And the food that we get is super fresh. And there's like prickly pear right out there that you can eat. You know, it's amazing. And I think a lot of us are missing out on that whole experience of being outside, finding food. And you don't have to get that into it, but if you walk down that path for a little while, you might just get really into it. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like the paleo diet is so popular right now. And I feel like that paleo diet that people have gotten, so they take the basic concepts of it and then they eat a lot of the processed foods. You know, they're, right. They're not looking at where, you know, they're eating all this meat and they're not looking at where it comes from. And it's
a shame.
It is a shame. Because there is some good value to the paleo diet. I mean, I don't agree with everything, but there's a lot of good in it. And a lot of it has to do with what you're talking about getting food from nature, unprocessed foods.
And that's one of the reasons that I use the term wild, because it hasn't been abused by marketers yet, you know, or at least it was abused a while ago and now it's okay again. It doesn't have that image in people's mind. But, you know, I was at the first paleo conference that I know of years ago, and Dave Asprey was there, and a lot of the people who, you know, have kind of come up in the ranks, you know, Mark Sisson, Rob Wolf, and at that point no one had heard of paleo really, and everyone was making fun of it, and you know, this is ridiculous or whatever. But what we were talking about is basically it's a template, it's a lens to see the world through. Would a caveman recognize our food as food? And in most cases today, the food that you find, the answer is no. And so if you're trying to use a paleo approach, that works. But if you're trying to make it dogmatic and sell paleo diet books or sell paleo processed food, which is happening now, it's going to confuse a lot of people. And so when I go into a store and see something that's paleo and I flip it over and it has 15, 20 grams of sugar in it, it's this little, you know, why is it paleo again? Because it has honey in it? That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, so unfortunately, a lot of people are being tricked by the marketers, the same marketers that abused low-fat, low-carb, everything. So paleo is too easy to abuse because it's not really a diet as much as it is a template or a lens that you can use. And I think it's a really good one. It's certainly one that I use. I'm a big fan of like true paleo, but what is that, right? It's the way that I see food is, would an animal see this as food, right? Like I have this point in the book where a lot of people like to ignore the fact that our fruit comes from halfway across the world, has been festering in the bottom of a tanker, you know, for weeks or months before you get it. And it was picked when it was unripe, sprayed with ethylene gas, and then covered with a bunch of chemicals and wax to make it look nice to us in the store so that we buy it. In contrast that to an apple that was grown, an heirloom apple, like a heritage breed, old school apple, not one that has been bred for sweetness and size and appearance, but one that's an actual apple. if you put those two things next to each other, almost anyone in the right mind would go for the pretty apple. But if a worm approaches it, it's going to go for the organic, natural apple full of nutrients every single time. So are we smarter than worms? Are we smarter than insects that won't touch margarine or processed food? I mean, I would venture to say that there is that instinct within all of us. It's just been so blasted by processed food that it's kind of hijacked our brains that we don't realize how important it is to go for that fresh, local, organic apple over the one that looks really good.
Yeah, that's so true. So what are some things that people can start doing to make sure that they're getting these wild foods, these foods that are really going to nurture our body?
One of my favorite things to do, and we do it pretty much every day, is have a green smoothie or a big salad. You know, it's really easy to work that into your habits because vegetables, whether you like it or not, are everywhere. And if you get good ones, they actually do taste really good. But if you combine that with another step, which is basically see your food as not something that is just a momentary taste, but something that makes you feel good or bad within the minutes, the hours, the days following. So an example is that like green smoothies, basically what that is we take a blender, we throw it, essentially. It could be kale, a little bit of tart or tangy fruit like berries that's low sugar. You want to stay away from sugar for sure. Everyone knows that's bad, but it's in everything. So you really have to be intentional about not putting it into your own food. So greens, a little bit of fruit maybe. You can put nuts in there. You can put protein powder, whatever you want really that's low in sugar, high in fiber, and fresh. And when you drink something like that, you might be like, oh, this is kind of tart or it's not that sweet. It doesn't taste that good. And you might be right. But for the next few hours, you feel awesome. Better than eating almost anything else. You know, in terms of like how you feel, how you perform. You know, for me, I'm a musician and play for thousands of people sometimes. So it's really important that I don't feel like crap and that I have plenty of energy. And, you know, I'm doing 7 of these interviews in a row for a week straight or whatever. I need to be running on the highest performance foods I can find. So not that taste isn't important. It's really important. But eating for the way that you feel is even more important than taste, because food is something, especially if you're really into the outdoors. I used to lead outdoor trips for incoming freshmen to Dartmouth. And basically, a lot of these kids, you know, best and the brightest cream of the crop or whatever, but they'd never peed in the woods. They didn't know how to, you know, cook something up on a fire or whatever. And especially when you're hiking 12 miles a day or whatever, and then going mountain climbing or rock climbing, you see food in a completely different way. And I still stand by this, that the best tasting food I've ever had was a dehydrated bean burrito that we made over the fire on some crazy camping trip. So like once you start to see food as fuel and as something that is to be appreciated and really seek out the highest quality stuff and get away from the processed food that hijacks your brain and makes your palate kind of immune to any sort of real taste, then your whole relationship with food and how you fuel yourself, whether you're an athlete or a busy mom or anyone in between, you really need to be focusing on food quality as opposed to that silver bullet that everyone's looking for. Eat an avocado because it's going to lower your cholesterol. Oh, wait, cholesterol doesn't matter, the White House just said. Sorry about that, right? It's like that whole world of things is really confusing. It's, eggs are the worst possible thing for you, and then they're the best possible thing for you the next week. And so when you start to see that it's not eggs, it's the quality of your eggs, right? There's no – the things that you buy for 99 cents a dozen at Walmart are not in any way the same thing as the dozen eggs that you get from a farmer's market that come from chickens that are running around eating grubs, seeds, and all the things that they're supposed to be eating that are full of nutrients, and translating that to either their meat or their eggs or whatever. If you're getting it for 99 cents from Walmart, you're getting something that is a pathetic excuse for an egg. In the same way that that apple is disgusting and not good for you and packed with sugar and packed with all sorts of pesticides and chemicals that are not going to do your body a service. Like the apple a day thing doesn't work if you're eating the apples that most people eat.
Yeah. The apples that the worms won't eat, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I know. I think it's true. And I think a lot of people, once they make that change, it's a lot easier to avoid those foods that people get in the habit of eating. The sodas and the candy and the processed foods, they just don't taste the same.
I had a dream last night. It was actually kind of a nightmare that I accidentally drank Diet Coke. And if you do this for long enough, you might have dreams like that too, where it's like, that stuff is straight up addictive poison, you know? And there's a lot of stuff like that that's just in front of us, and all of your friends are ordering around you at lunch and is in every corner store, supermarket, health food store, whatever. You need to really be somewhat educated on what you're up against. And so in my book, I talk about a lot of things that I wasn't able to talk about for a while when I was working directly with these companies, but can kind of just say outright that a lot of these companies that we know and see commercials for every day, they won't feed their products to their own children because they know how damaging they are.
Yeah. And then you see things like sugar-free stevia sweetened sodas.
Yeah.
Like that's going to be much better, right?
It's the same thing as paleo processed cupcakes. That doesn't make any sense. You know, it really doesn't. And yeah, you could still buy it and be tricked into it, but you're letting yourself be tricked. Right. And I think we deep down, we all kind of know that. We know what's good for us. We know what's fresh and what smells good, what tastes good, what is nutrients in it and what doesn't. So don't let yourself be tricked by the commercials and the media and the marketing, because it's the health industry, after being in it for a while in a bunch of different ways, it is ugly. You know, I've worked in energy, in the medical establishment, pharmaceutical companies, and I can say that the health industry is one of the dirtiest ones we have.
Unless we're on the side like you and I are on, then that's good.
Right. Yeah. No, seriously, yeah. I have no business starting up a podcast about health, and certainly not getting super popular with it. But I think it did because I was one of the only people who wasn't bought and paid for when I started my show. And now there are wonderful people like you and a lot of other people are kind of getting into this independent media thing. But man, I saw who was dominating the rankings, and it was the wrong people. So I wanted to be something that worked against that and worked for people who are just trying to get the truth, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk more about what you found that helps. And you've talked about feasting and fasting and how that can improve health and productivity, performance. Tell us about that.
So it might surprise some people who are listening that whenever I'm doing long interview days like this, or long writing days, or long music days, or whatever, like mental work as opposed to physical work, I usually don't eat until sundown. And so I call under eating during the day fasting, even if I might have a green smoothie, or I might have some veggies, maybe a little bit of fruit or nuts, or like small snacking. But basically, I reserve cooked food until the evening when we have an enormous feast. And really enjoy it and, you know, have dinner. Usually it's just me and my wife and our dog, but we really try to make an excuse to make an event out of cooking the way that Italians do, or the way that like people do in other cultures where food is never taken for granted. And one of the coolest things about saving your biggest meals for the end of the day is that we all know what happens when you eat like a heavy meal in the morning or at lunch or whatever, and you're just foggy headed, you crash, you don't feel like doing anything. So you just slug coffee or do whatever you can to drag your butt through the rest of the day. But I found that I didn't actually get hungry until I started eating. When I started, you know, especially when you start eating fat as opposed to carbs as your main fuel source, or you eat a lot of veggies and not much sugar or carbs, you become fat adapted. And, What that means is you're basically, your brain and your body is running on your own fat stores or the fat that you eat in your diet, as opposed to sugar, which is basically the carbs that you eat turn into sugar. And it's this, you know, up and down feeling of energy. And so fasting is something that works really well for most men. For women, it's a little bit trickier. But I can say that my wife, after doing it for a while and doing it with me, a lot of times, if I go to 3 p.m. or 6 p.m. before my first real meal, she might go around noon for her first meal, around 3 p.m. or something like that. Or on some days, she might have breakfast. And I think it's really important. There's a Seinfeld that says that men are like Jeeps. We're kind of predictable. We're very functional. We do the same thing all the time. Creatures of habit. Women are much more, from a hormonal standpoint, cyclical. And if you have a lot of stress in your life, adding something like a lot of exercise or a lot of fasting or a lot of no sleep or anything else like that is not going to really help. So a little bit of stress, like if you go and do some squats, for example, with weights, a little bit of stress is really good for your body. It kind of engages these mechanisms that allow it to grow and rebuild. It's similar to fasting in the sense that when you withhold food from your body for a period of time, even if it's just a few hours or a meal, it allows you to reserve the energy that would have been used for digestion, which takes a lot of energy, and put it in other places, like helping repair your cells. There's a lot of science that supports that when you undereat for a period of time, the body kind of goes into repair mode as opposed to cell division mode. When you're overeating all the time or have a constant supply of glucose or sugar or carbs in your system from eating a lot of meals, then that there's been a lot of science that shows that that can accelerate aging. And I know that a lot of people are listening to your show and watching your show because you're, you know, 40 but look like you're 20 or whatever. And like anti-aging is, for me, one of the biggest reasons that I do the under-eating fasting type thing, because I think a lot of people remember that series of studies that came out that said when you starve yourself over the course of your entire life, you live a little bit longer, right? We all kind of remember that and we're like, ah, that's not worth it. But then science came out later from the fasting research that said basically you get the same effects from skipping a meal every once in a while, from doing intermittent fasting. And so once I started to do that, there was just like no turning back. I had so much energy. I felt so much better. And it was a lot easier to keep excess fat off. Now, if I am going to do something like go out for a really long hike or do a big workout or something like that, eating is important, obviously, and it will give you more energy. But I think that the take-home point is that there's no reason that even like my doctor told me to eat 6 small meals a day and I was shoving food down my throat and getting fat, even though I was dieting. And it was like, mm-hmm. Don't do that. Right? Yeah. So this is the opposite of that.
Yeah. And there has been a big trend towards that. And some people are still talking about you should be eating frequent meals throughout the day, eating your bigger meals in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so this is definitely different from what most people are used to hearing.
If you're a farmer and you have to work 14 hours, like there's a point in the book where my dad's side of the family was written up in the Ladies' Home Journal in the 1950s, and they're dairy farmers. And so if you're working 14 hours a day on the farm, yeah, eat a big breakfast. But if you're working in an office and sitting there all day, do you really need an enormous breakfast to like fuel your body throughout the day? Probably not. And so I think, you know, I don't have anything against breakfast, but I will say it's the most dangerous meal of the day because food companies make breakfast, like the foods that are called breakfast food, like there is no breakfast food. Food is food. But the foods that you find in the breakfast aisles or whatever, cereals, processed grains, bagels, like bagels and donuts are pretty similar, but somehow bagels get away with being called a health food and donuts are not. So don't eat bagels thinking that it's good for you, especially not in the morning. So in my book, like I say, you don't even have to read this whole stupid book. I'll tell you right now, like the biggest thing that you can do to lose fat and be healthy for the rest of your life. And that's stay away from sugars and processed grains, especially in the morning. And if you can get that, and then you kind of like eat some more vegetables or whatever too, get energy from there instead, you'll feel like a new person.
Yeah, I really believe that. That's so true. And I've wondered a lot about how breakfast foods got to be breakfast foods, because they really are not a good way to start our day. Orange juice and cereal and pastries, they're really not a good way to start the day. And I think that people just aren't very hungry in the morning. So it's like, here, have something that that your palate will like, that, that your taste buds will like. But, because you have to have food in the morning. What we've been told. What you're saying is you could start with like a smoothie, like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's really all you need to get going. Yeah. And in fact, that can give you more energy.
Yeah, it absolutely can. Or you can have something like, it might seem uncouth or unusual to have vegetables in the morning, but that's a great any time of the day is a great time to eat veggies and get them in. You can always feel good about it. You don't have to count it against calories or weigh it or whatever. Like, basically bonus points. Eat an ungodly amount of vegetables. Get them in whenever you can. So I think you're totally right about the breakfast thing. If you're running a company that sells breakfast foods and dominates that whole market, then there's a pretty heavy interest in saying breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And when the same company is kind of buy and pay for doctors and the media and health experts to advertise their super high glycemic, low quality breakfast meals, then all of a sudden the whole discussion about what breakfast is changes and turns into something that we have today, which is nonsense. But something like a green smoothie, great morning option. If you're going to eat breakfast, you can also have something a little bit more savory, hearty, especially if you have physical work. But like a little bit like a scramble, or if you just throw some eggs in with some veggies or some onions or whatever, eggs in the morning without the grains, without the sugars, without the high glycemic carb choice, which we're used to, will be an awesome, it'll give you great energy throughout the day. And something that where the flavor comes from fat, like an egg, is great because it fills you up in a way that carbs just can't. It fills the day and even into the next day, whereas carbs are kind of this high octane fuel that we all know how it works because we've tried soda or we've had cake, and you know how you feel just usually 30 to 60 minutes after, which is hungry and miserable, even though you ate that whole thing of cake, which you shouldn't have done, but we all do. It doesn't stop you from that next craving cycle. And so we get on this craving, carb craving cycle that makes us want and eat more carbs. And it's hard to get off of that. I'm not going to, say that it's easy to make these changes. But if you're interested in being healthy, living a long time, keeping weight off, not getting sick, strengthening your immune system, then this is exactly what you have to do.
So let's talk about fats. You've talked a lot about vegetables, and you've touched on fat some, and you've mentioned that most people don't eat enough fats.
Yeah.
Right? And that's one of your big things is you eat a lot more fat than most people.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of fat? I mean, we're not talking about any kind of fat. So I just want to make sure we clarify that.
Yeah. As with anything that's processed or manipulated by man or machine is almost always bad. Or at least it's not good. The things that are good come from nature, as close to nature intended. So for me, like my family on the dad's side, dairy farmers. So I love dairy. My brother, works on an organic farm, sometimes makes his own cheese. I'm a big fan of dairy. Dairy doesn't work for everyone, though. When I have dairy, though, I don't really drink milk. I have heavy whipping cream, like pure fat. And when you get it in the spring, or when the cows are grazing on fresh grass that are full of nutrients, you're getting omegas for your brain, CLA, so many nutrients that are really hard to get from other places. So that's one kind of on the animal side. That's my favorite personally from a taste perspective. Cooking in butter is incredible. But if you don't do well with dairy, like my wife, for instance, doesn't do well with dairy at all. Having something like ghee, which takes the milk solids out, is a great option. And you can apply this to almost any oil there is, except for the ones that are industrial, like corn oil or soy oil. they're flavorless glop that have to be manipulated to even be on a shelf. Most of those things were waste products that were turned into consumer food and then put into processed food to save money. But some of my favorite fats, especially the ones that I would recommend to almost everybody, are the vegetable-based fats. So coconut, coconut cream, coconut oil, not the kind that we got in the 90s that was hydrogenated, you know, that was the vegetable fats like Crisco, which are not recognized. Like, how do you get fat out of vegetables that don't have fat in them? It's a bizarre thing, and it takes a lot of white-coated scientists to turn non-foods into food. So coconut is great. That's a fatty fruit that's almost like a vegetable in terms of like health and how you eat it. It's full of so many things, short chain fats that are really good for you. Avocados are probably my favorite because those are just like ready to go. It's a food that a lot of times I'll just carry it around. It has its own packaging, right? I carry it around in my pack or we'll go for a hike. You cut it in half, put a little bit of salt on there. Or a little bit of pepper, a little bit of garlic, whatever, and it's ready to go. Or you can put it over salads. You can also use avocado oil to cook with. And that works really well as a high temperature heat. It has a higher smoke point than something like olive oil, which is another great option, but not for greasing a skillet or high temperature cooking. So the more that you can get fats that are kind of in their raw state, they're unprocessed, non-pasteurized, non-homogenized fats. It's going to be good for you, whether it's, you know, coming from an avocado or coming from a cow or coming from an egg. Like an egg, a lot of people think eggs are high protein, but they're actually primarily fat. And a lot of the things in the yolk are exceptionally good for you and hard to get from other places. So it's not like you need to go and get fat and glug it down, but use fat as the thing that flavors your food. So if you're going to eat a salad, make sure it's covered with high quality olive oil or avocados, or even if you tolerate it, high quality fermented raw cheese or goat cheese or something like that. You can get really creative with how you cook as well, because it's hard to make food taste good if it doesn't have fat in it. You kind of have to add sugar or something, and that's why food processors do. They add sugar or chemicals that act like sugar or act like poison or whatever. But when you start to cook like the French, right, with very rich foods, you're surprised that you can fill up on this little, you know, this little slice of quiche that has a little bit of, you know, salted meat like bacon in it and a little bit of cheese or a little bit of something really, really rich in it. That's how we eat. And I'm never going back to the cardboard that I was eating when I was trying to eat low fat. It's just, you can kind of make it work, but it's miserable. Why?
Yeah, I remember that very well and not enjoying the low-fat days. I'm so glad mm-hmm. that we know now that we don't have to eat that way. In fact, it's much better if we don't.
Indeed.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I want to go back to the big meal at the end of the day, your big mm-hmm. dinner. Because I know, and even for me, that's a little bit, I'm like, really? That's the biggest meal. And I think I do that, but still I think it's hard to grasp that idea because we've been taught for so right. many years, eat breakfast, that's your biggest meal, and then eat a light dinner. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So people don't go and carb load before bedtime because you still don't want to do that either.
Yeah. But if there is a good time to eat carbs or an okay time, it's later in the day. Because what happens in the morning when you eat carbs is the thing that gets you out of bed is cortisol, a stress hormone. That's what wakes you up. And when you eat carbs or something sugary that's high glycemic in the morning, the interaction between your stress hormones and your insulin, which stores fat, is ugly, makes you hungry, and you're more likely to store fat that way. But when you do it at night, when you have a big feast at night like we do, often you find that you don't eat as much as you'd expect. You know, like I still eat quite a lot at night for sure, especially if I'm not eating throughout the day. But in the morning, it's really easy to kind of like, you're hungry all the time, or at least I am. And at night, like we said, it was really bad to have that crash early in the day or in the middle of the day from eating a heavy meal or too many carbs or whatever. But when when you do it at night, say after sundown, which we usually eat after sundown, which kind of, you know, if you go back to what paleo is, that's what it's all about. You're out working all day. You're being physical, or you're under eating, kind of like gathering during the day, and hunter by night. You eat something that's a prepared meal, a cooked meal. It's a ritual, really. And then after that happens, you get really sleepy. And so I went from struggling to go to sleep before like 10, 11, 12, I would just lay there and look up at the ceiling tiles, count sheep, whatever, and I couldn't fall asleep when I was eating the other way. Now I happily fall asleep at like 8:30 or 9 every night and wake up really early the next morning without an alarm, because my body was fueled kind of in the right way, in a way that works with your biology, your circadian rhythm. So having the big meal at night has so many advantages as well for your family, I think, as a ritual that a lot of us have been robbed of, or we don't even know that it really exists. If you go and have dinner in Italy, it lasts 5 hours, right? If you get dinner in America, you're in the front seat of a car eating a greasy burrito or whatever, because you're on the way to something else. So taking the time to, if you're under eating during the day, you're saving a lot of time there in terms of food preparation, or you're not having to go anywhere else. In my book, I have a whole section that talks about that. Like, what are you going to do with all this extra time? I just gave you an extra 2 hours, and it's great. You can get a lot of stuff done. But then when you really look forward to the end of the day, having a big, satisfying meal with your family and friends, there's something that it does to your psychology where it's like, okay, this is an event. We've had dinner together. It's fun, right? Like, you talk, you take your time, you really focus on the sensory experience that everyone can have, but most of us don't really get unless it's Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. And then those things, especially in the West, are so they're so full of that fruitcake that has been passed around for years and all that sugary nonsense that a lot of times we don't have occasions where we have big healthy meals. And that's what I'm talking about, the big healthy meals that you can look forward to every day.
Yeah, and I think you bring up some great points. I mean, that time that we have of gathering together, and I always do that every night with my kids too. We have a big meal at night so that we can spend time together. We take our time and we give thanks, we give gratitude for something that happened in the day, and it's really time to come together. And having that balanced meal that you're talking about, not loading up with sugar. Because the last thing we want to do at night before we go to bed is eat some sugar and then crave more sugar, right? And then,
right.
You know, and then that has its own spiral of problems. Mm-hmm. So, but what you're talking about is, yeah, you can get those high quality carbohydrates later in the day, but you also want to balance that with the healthy proteins and fats and veggies and all that good stuff, right?
Yeah. And when you eat a fair amount of fat, and that's where your flavor is coming from, like we recommend, like in our recipes, you find that you don't really need to eat a bunch of rice, or it's like, that's the worst part of the meal in a lot of cases. When you're doing it right, veggies have a lot of flavor. Meats certainly have a lot of flavor, but if you choose to have something that's like a non-meat option, you can get so much flavor from really fresh things, even like quinoa or whatever. You can have refined quinoa and refined couscous and stuff like that. Or you can get the sprouted true whole grain, well, pseudo grain or whatever. You can get kind of like the alive version of any food. So one of the problems that we have is a lot of people say quinoa's bad because it's a pseudo grain, or wheat's bad because it has gluten in it. And that's kind of the wrong approach, because I've eaten a lot of wheat that makes me feel really good and gives me a lot of energy. I'm not celiac or anything like that, but I can tell you that I avoid almost all wheat that I find in America, because what's happened to our food is really unfortunate. And so there are some foods like corn, wheat, soy that are hard to get the like real version in America. So when you start to focus on high quality meals, then you find eating white rice just isn't that appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Abel. It's just given us great information and getting us back to our roots, getting us back to nature and real, yes, real foods, real. I mean, that's how I grew up. I grew up on a farm and that's how we ate. And so I keep trying to get more and more back to that.
Yeah,
with totally. My patients and my own life. So how can people get your book? Tell us about that. I'm also going to put up a link on my website too. So we'll have that.
Yeah, it's called The Wild Diet, and it's available anywhere books are sold. But easiest ways to get it are to go to wilddietbook.com, and we're doing a bunch of giveaways. We're giving away cooking gear, a drone that does HD video for recording your adventures, GoPros, and pretty much everything in between. So we're making a big event out of it. It's wilddietbook.com. And then if you like podcasts or online shows, whatever, I have like coming up on 150 episodes with including Dr. Trevor. And that's called Fat Burning Man, as you said, and it's at fatburningman.com.
Great. All right. Thanks so much, Abel.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Abel James. To learn more about Abel and his new book, The Wild Diet, visit my website, drtrevorcates.com. Go to the podcast page with his interview, and you'll see the information and link to his book there. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the Spa Doctor podcast on my website or on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.